I thought perhaps, Maestro, that we could start by catching up a bit on the things you've been doing this summer.
The concert that I did in Nairobi, the 19th of July, was part of this concert that I do every year as a concert for friendship that I started in Sarajevo many years ago. And this year I brought the Cherubini Orchestra, the young orchestra, the orchestra of young Italian musicians, to Nairobi to help a community of young children that have problems there of food, health. So they are helped by missionaries there, but they desperately need financial support. So we went there and we played a concert, inviting some young musicians of the Nairobi School of Music. That was interesting for me to know that in Nairobi there is a school of music, classical music. And then we had a chorus from Nairobi and a chorus of 300 kids,
Wow.
Boys and girls, and they had prepared Va Pensiero from Nabucco, and I rehearsed with them, and they sang with us, and it was interesting to see how great discipline they had, these kids, these children. They followed the rehearsal with great attention, with great discipline, and great enthusiasm, very serious, very serious. And then in the end, it was a great festa. Everybody was happy. They embraced everybody, the Italians with the people of Nairobi and the children, and were a large delegation of Maasai that came. And again, so I had the proof of the power of music. Because this was the first time that we went in the heart of Africa. Because in the last years, past years, I had been in Egypt, then in Morocco, in Syria, etc. But this time in the heart of so very of Africa, very, very far away from our culture. I think that was the first time that the music of Verdi, Bellini, and Donizetti was played there, but with great result. And then after I went back to the next day, I went to Salzburg and started rehearsals of Macbeth with having as a stage director Peter Stein, maybe the most famous director. German director that one time was considered avant-garde, now is considered retrograde. And but I had a wonderful time with him because he loves music, he likes music, and he creates a regime not fighting against the music. And so
And he
we,
knows Shakespeare and he knows Italian.
yeah, he speaks fluent Italian because he lives most of the time in Umbria. So practically 2 hours from Rome, 1.5 hours from Rome, in the heart of Italy, where he makes good wine. And he says good oil. I believe that the olive oil that he makes is very good, but I think that the olive oil that comes from my country, that is Puglia, is much better. But we have a discussion all the time about this. And so I did eight performances of Macbeth. that had a great success with good singers in the Felsenreitschule. Mm-hmm. This was not in the Grosses Festspielhaus, in the Felsenreitschule, where is a stage of 42 meters, of large 42 meters, and that Stein used completely. So for the first time, I had the chorus of the witches dancing, running, singing together with the orchestra. And sometime I had the chorus in front of me, sometime I had the chorus 30 meters distant. At least that was a demonstration that it's not true that I want all the singers that look at me straight in the eyes.
We should say this is the space that people will know the imagery of, because this is where the balconies were carved into the mountain, and this was the riding school, the stone riding school, where members of the court in Salzburg could watch the horses doing the exercise and events.
And Stein had made many works there, not only for opera, but especially for drama. Mm-hmm. So he knew the stage very, very well and how to use it. Then after 8 performances of Macbeth, I did... it was interesting because the 28th of July was my birthday, actually an important one because the 70th anniversary. And I celebrate this with all the witches and murders of Macbeth. And they had prepared a cake, and beautiful big cake for my birthday. And they took pictures that are very interesting, because I took the sword from Macbeth. There's a sword long, almost 2 meters. and I cut the cake...
with the sword?
With the sword, yes. But then I had a rehearsal immediately after. I didn't eat anything, so the cake went in the mouth of the murderers and the witches. And then I did 2 performances of Verdi Requiem in the Grosses Festspielhaus with the Vienna Philharmonic. And after the Requiem, I remember that I did the last performance of Macbeth the 24th of August. I finished late in the evening, and the next morning I had a rehearsal with the Chicago Symphony.
And a different group of witches.
No, but that was very interesting.
Yes.
Because when you spend almost 2 months in Salzburg with the Vienna Philharmonic, and so I know the Vienna Philharmonic, as everybody knows, since 40 years, but then you have one group of musicians and you see the faces of your musicians that you know since a lifetime. And then suddenly you have your own orchestra that arrives from Chicago, and in the same place where you have seen the Vienna Philharmonic for 40 days, suddenly you see other faces, completely different. And even if it's your own orchestra, it's a little bit a shock, no?
Yes.
Like changing complete. It's another world that right. comes in. Because it's another language, another attitude, another way of playing. And that was, I needed inside me minutes before adjusting
right.
to a situation.
It wasn't just automatic. There needed to be something that made a transition.
See, yeah. Because I had been too long with the other group and in another world. Mm-hmm. But I was very happy to see my musicians, and they were very happy to be there, and they knew that an important tour was starting, and important because was different from the other tour that we made 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, so I don't remember. because 3 years ago, I think.
Yes.
Because the other tour, I was bringing a great orchestra, but as a guest conductor. And this time, everybody was curious to see how this marriage was working, not only in the moment of the performance on the stage, but how the orchestra had already had started to change, or if it was the same, if it was better, if it was worse. You know, there was a great curiosity. Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased to see, first was a great triumph with the public, but also with the critics. And I was very happy to read in some papers that people started realized that was already a change in the sound of the orchestra.
How would you characterize that change, or how did they characterize it?
That especially in the strings, the sound of the string was much more mellow and singing kind of sound.
Cantabile.
That the orchestra sang more and was a better balance in between the different sections of the orchestra. So practically, because in the past was always people were inclined to say that the brass of the Chicago Symphony, as a compliment, of course, because of the quality of the brass, but also because they were overwhelming sometimes. No,
si dice sure. Così? Yes.
But now they were still considered a fantastic group of players, but more balanced with the rest of the orchestra.
Right. And you had an opportunity to introduce a piece on some of the concerts that you had commissioned here in Chicago by Bernard Rentz.
Yeah, Bernard Rentz's piece was practically performed almost everywhere, in Salzburg, in Vienna, in Paris, and was very well accepted by the public everywhere. And so at least we gave the possibility in 10 days to public of many important cities of Europe to hear the music of an excellent American composer.
Mm-hmm. In Lucerne, you had a somewhat unexpected, and I think from everything I heard and the pictures I saw, very pleasant meeting with Pierre Boulez.
Yeah, he came to both concerts in Lucerne. You know, I'm very grateful to Boulez, to Maestro Boulez, for what he did and is doing for this orchestra in the past, in the period of transition. He loves the Chicago Symphony, and I think that all the musicians were very happy to see him. There was a sort of father, you know, that was visiting the sons and we took a picture that is here in my office.
Right.
And because I want that that when he comes here, he feels even more at home, knowing that the music director loves and admires him very much.
That's wonderful. You came then to Chicago, and in addition, of course, to the important downtown concerts, though, you launched the season on the south side of Chicago, at the Apostolic Church of God. And obviously, Kenya is one thing. There's not a direct correspondence, but there is a comparison that can be made. The idea that some people have, that some people are not interested in music, or that some people don't want to hear classical music. And with the opening of the season at this congregation, which I found from the sitting in the audience, was a more attentive audience than often is found in very famous concert halls. I won't name names, but and I would imagine when you said proof of the power of music, this was not just proof of the power of music, but as you alluded to in your comments from the podium, proof of the power of communication, two-way communication.
Yeah, I was very happy and I was very moved by this this experience. Years ago, I announced that I wanted to bring music to areas where people were far away from this concert hall here. Now, the reasons people are are away from the Symphony Hall in Chicago, from far away from La Scala, from away from the Musikverein, are very complicated reasons we cannot now explain now. And but certainly the fault is not of the people that are away, but of governments, of politicians, of people that are have the responsibility of the education of a society. And I don't believe that people that naturally are born in the impossibility to get close to classical music. It's that the world of classical music sometimes is too elitarian, too stiff, too arrogant. And we have so simple people that have different education, that didn't have the money to study music or to go to certain schools, etc., they grow completely out, far away from this world. And so they not only they see this world like a world that is foreigner, no, strange, but sometimes as an enemy. Because many times you have simple people, poor people, that when they walk in front of a theater, they see other people that look like aliens, no, that belong to another world, the world, healthy world, rich world. I mean, I don't have anything against the rich, but I'm not saying this. But in the schools, these boys and girls, that they should be able to be educated not to learn an instrument, because that doesn't make any sense. You know, it's not important to play well a piano or a violin or a cello, but to be educated to move your steps in this magic forest of sounds. And this is what makes your soul then better, your mind more refined, and make people more inclined to embrace other people in the concept of harmony, that is the basic element of music. But this is something, it's a big problem that is affecting now Italy or Europe, United States, etc. Music is not an entertainment, but also music is not a boring, difficult thing where you, if you don't understand, you are not allowed to be part of this world. You have to take people by hand. Is correct, says the hand, and bring dolcemente, in a sweet way, to this, and explain piano piano. And I have never met a person that, after a good experience of contact with the world of classical music, a person that rejects this this world.
And I think, though, we also should not discount that it will happen, and it does happen all of the time, that some people then decide that as they take their steps, some of those steps might lead them to study a classical instrument and even to have great accomplishment with that or with the voice. I interview soloist musicians all the time, and it's amazing when they tell the story of their first encounter. Maybe someone came into their school, maybe an uncle loaned them an instrument. So, yes, it shouldn't have to be you must learn this or study that and it's going to get you a job. Probably not. But we shouldn't discount that the influence you bring might also lead somebody to pick up some studies or to increase them. Yes?
Certo. And in the when I was at the Apostolic Church of God, I was impressed by the kind of silence the participation. No, the I felt that the people were not there just in a passive way. I could feel through the silence that was a silence of great participation. They wanted to. They had their eyes wide open and the ears wide open to this new world of music, and the way they responded with the applause and the comments when I came out, you know, one word that was enough to understand that they really enjoyed this experience. So I think that, as I said, I will come back, but please, you also come back to us.
Yes.
Because it should not be only one way. There's both ways. Right. Now you come that because you have realized what we do, and that despite the appearance, we are normal people.
At least in some ways.
In some ways, yes.
You also paid a visit, one you have paid before, to a group of young people who at least currently cannot come to visit Orchestra Hall because they are incarcerated at the Illinois Youth Center in Warrenville.
Warrenville.
And unfortunately, again, I was not able to make this this trip, but I'm wondering if you might say something about the most recent experience in Warrenville.
I went back because the experience the other time was very positive, so I wanted to repeat, because I think that when you create something, it's good that you go back, because if not... only one time looks like, doesn't create anything one time and then you disappear. So going back, you demonstrate that you really care about what you want to do with them and for them. The first thing that was interesting was that of the group of the last year, there were only three that were last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to see
some of
that
them graduated.
Yeah, say they left. And yes. But the group that I met this time was even better, more opened, less suspicious, because we must realize that it's not easy for a group of girls. Young girls that had difficult experiences in life, no, to see suddenly a man from south of Italy that comes in, and why, you know, why he wants to play and wants to speak about music, but this year they were much more mature, I think. And prepared, open. Maybe they had been explained by somebody about the experience of last year, but I found them more ready to what I was going to speak about and to explain. So this time I brought a program that was a little bit different, where some one area of Così fan tutte Mozart. And Bellini, Romeo, Capulet, Montecchi. So I could speak about composers that were genius, but also people that from that didn't have a happy life, or in any case, they had a short life and the tragic experiences. Mozart, I explained that Mozart died very young. And he spent years going around Europe to find a job, and everybody preferred always an inferior person to him. And he ended in Paris, where his mother died. And at that time, to have your mother dead in Paris and to go back to Salzburg must have been something extremely dramatic. And then Bellini that died so young, and the story of Romeo and Juliet. But the theme that I brought was love in very large view. And so Così fan tutte, Romeo e Giulietta. Then I played some songs of Francesco Paolo Tosti. Tosti was a composer, the contemporary of Verdi. I mean, younger than Verdi, but he lived, he knew Liszt, he knew Verdi very well. He was a very cultivated composer, but instead of composing operas, he wrote melodies.
Songs,
that were
yes.
songs mm-hmm. that were very, very famous. Mm-hmm. All the great tenors, great soprani, etc., from Caruso to Schipa, they sang this. And he became extremely popular in London, mm-hmm. where he had honors, etc., etc. But then he went back to Italy, but his songs are extremely popular in Italy and extremely beautiful, written like a real composer. And so we played, it was this girl that works there, mezzo-soprano, and she helps the girls there to learn music, to exercise with music, etc., etc. So she sang these arias, and then I played a beautiful piece of Verdi, a notturno, that I had played when in La Scala, when I did a concert to celebrate the 100 years of the birth, the death of Verdi, mm-hmm. in the year 2001. And this notturno is one of the early works of Verdi, written for pianoforte. I play the piano. And then flauto, where the flutist from the Chicago Symphony, flauto and three singers, mezzo-soprano, tenore and basso, that came from the chorus of the Chicago Symphony Chorus. And this is a beautiful piece, and then the girls were very happy about the performances, and then I asked them questions, and they asked many questions about how it's possible to reach excellence, the level, and they asked a question to me, to the performers, to the flute.
Their questions were very serious.
Very serious.
They were not trivial.
No, absolutely not. Very serious questions. So this was again a very good good experience. And also, like in Salzburg, they had prepared a cake for me.
People want to bake cakes for you.
See,
right?
See. But this time I didn't have the sword.
Okay. You said something, according to one of the reports that I read, you said something to these younger women, these girls, about finding something that they would give them a focus, or keeping some kind of an ambition and an individuality. Does that ring a bell, or something that you spoke to them about the importance of this kind
yes,
of dedication?
I told them that we have to have a direction in our life.
And a goal?
A goal. And go in that direction. And even destiny or fate or society is against, we have to keep trying and going. I said, look, I brought the example of Mozart. I said he was maybe the most important, the greatest composer, but he was treated badly many times. And in different cities in Europe, aristocrats or powerful people, always they chose somebody else that was much more inferior to Mozart than Mozart. And so I said society many times is unfair. People are unfair, but that this is not a reason that we should be discouraged and to give up. We have to keep insisting and going on, and this was the message that I wanted to tell them.
A very important message and an appropriate one in any context. In the 2 weeks of concerts remaining, or two programs of concerts remaining in your fall residency here, you've done something that I think is quite insightful. To commemorate anniversaries of Liszt in one case and Mahler in another, you have not just pulled together some pieces semi-randomly. I sometimes think, particularly in Britain and Europe, where they are almost anniversary mad, you know, they say, you know, it's going to be the Ray Vaughan Williams year, or it's going to be the this year. And if you play every Mahler symphony every month, you're not playing any of them. You're not getting any connection. But you did, for the Liszt, the program that Frederick Stock and Rudolf Ganz, a great pedagogue in Chicago, presented for the 100th anniversary of Liszt. And then for Mahler, you are doing the program that, as it happened, was the very last program that Mahler played anywhere. And it was a program mostly of works that he had become interested in that were by, if we can use this dreadful word, dreaded word, contemporary Italian composers, contemporary of his time, 1911. So I guess first I just want to say, as a listener, thank you, because it's nice to have a different way into these people's lives rather than an automatic one. And then secondly, of course, if you might say something about those programs.
Sì, the list speaks by itself, because I took this program and I wanted to repeat exactly, also gave the possibility to play this program, the Faust Symphony, that is one of the greatest symphonic and choral works that ever been written, and also it's a piece very dear to me, because I have conducted many times, I recorded many years ago with the Philadelphia Orchestra. So the Liszt program, I have to thank Mr. Stock, because he had the idea, even I still don't understand the Huldigungsmarsch of Wagner, because he could have chosen something of Wagner better. Right. I mean, for example, I would have chosen doing the Faust symphony, and the second part, my choice would have been Ein Faust Overture, Wagner, and maybe at least Totentanz. To be more but this was the idea of Stock, so we repeated. But for Mahler, always I had this dream to find an occasion to play this program that I discovered when I was a guest in the New York Philharmonic. And as everybody knows, Mahler was the music director of the New York Philharmonic, and I found fascinating the fact that Mahler was so... we know that he was interested as a conductor in all kind of music. He was not just a specialist of this or that. And in fact, he conducted music very avant-garde for his time, atonal music, etc., and also Mascagni, Cavalleria Rusticana, and Pagliacci, that is completely the opposite. And I couldn't believe that Mahler was interested in Cavalleria Rusticana. But so that means that he was a real conductor, in the sense that a real conductor is open to all kind of experiences. You don't make choices. I mean, there is a music that you like to conduct more than other, but you have to be open to them. And the fact that he had commissioned this music to composers that were contemporary to him, and some of these composers practically have disappeared, even by the, in the Italian repertoire. Sinigaglia, for example, is note of Sinigaglia. And I don't think that Mahler chose Sinigaglia because Sinigaglia was a Jewish Italian composer. So I don't think that was just a choice to help somebody of his. But this piece of Sinigaglia, it's really a wonderful piece, a fantastic piece, and I'm glad to Mahler that I was able to study this piece of music that I will use maybe in the future also as an encore or something. Mm-hmm. It's also very, very difficult for the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Very difficult. Oh, the entire program, actually.
Yes, I can imagine.
It's very difficult. It's the most difficult program I've done until now. And then the Marco Enrico Bossi, we know the Marco Enrico Bossi because he was an important organist. Mm-hmm. One of a great, his name is legendary in Italy as organist. And in fact, he wrote many concertos for organ, etc., etc. But and both pieces, the Sinigaglia and Bossi, are connected with the Baruffe Chiozzotte Goldoni, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. great Italian writer. So there
Commedia
is
la Commedia.
See, so there is a subject that is common.
Right.
Both. And then we have this fantastic piece of Busoni, questa elegia, that is, I was shocked when I saw this piece because first, harmonically, is incredible for a composer at the time of Busoni because it's already atonal mm-hmm. piece, mm-hmm. was written for the death of his mother, mm. and interesting was proposed to the Berlin Philharmonic. This piece, and the Berlin Philharmonic rejected the piece because they didn't like the piece. And that is another chapter of the long history of the Vienna Berlin Philharmonic that many times they've rejected pieces that then have become extremely like Symphonie Fantastique or Beethoven Symphony.
To the repertoire. Yeah,
in the Schubert 9. So that's not good.
They shouldn't be allowed to play them if they rejected them.
Now, the Elegy of Busoni has not become popular, but is a piece of great musical interest, mm-hmm. and very, very moving. And then Martucci, of course, concerto that I recorded with La Scala years ago and was performed the first time in Russia, conducted by Anton Rubinstein, mm-hmm. and the first time with Toscanini conducting and Martucci playing the piano. Then I think that he had commissioned a piece to Alfredo Casella that at that time, that's for us an important composer because he wrote an important music and was very open to contemporary music. Mm-hmm. Quindi music of Schoenberg, Webern, etc., etc. And he was an important personality in the musical world in Italy. But apparently Casella didn't finish the work, so Mahler put the Italian symphony instead. The fact that he chose the Italian symphony means clearly that he wanted a program based on the Italian culture.
Yes, yes.
That is goes to great credit for Mahler as a composer and as conductor and as a whole as musician. And this should be an example also for the conductors of today because Mahler, with all his works as a composer, as conductor in New York, in Vienna, had time to work on Sinigaglia, Marco Enrico Bossi, and who knows how many others. So that means that he was really giving a big service to the music of his time. But what is interesting is that I know that when he conducted this concert, that was his last concert, because then the next day he was sick, he was ill, and he remained in New York for a while. Then he went back to Vienna and he died in Vienna. And when he conducted this concert, Toscanini was in the hall. Mm. So all these composers were all friends of Toscanini, mm-hmm. also. And we know that Toscanini had problems with Mahler because Toscanini I love Toscanini, admire Toscanini, but must have been not an easy person. Mm-hmm. He had problems with Mahler because it was a sort of
rivalry
as a conductor, maybe. But Toscanini was sitting in the hall together with Busoni, Marco Enrico Boss, one of the two. And so it was very courageous also of Mahler to conduct this Italian music of composers that were generally composers connected with Toscanini.
Right. Then you go to Stockholm. You get a little prize from Birgit Nilsson and her foundation, the late Birgit Nilsson, only the second recipient for a life really dedicated to music, which must be a special thing to receive, and then to Spain for the Prince of Asturias Prize. And then what are you doing? Making some music in Europe, I imagine.
Sí. Sí, I go to Stockholm and Oviedo after, and immediately after from Oviedo I go to Roma, where I take the connection and go the director to Shanghai. Mm-hmm. And I do a concert with the Shanghai Orchestra that I conducted last year also. It's a quite good orchestra. It's not a great orchestra, but it's a quite good orchestra made by many musicians that study in the United States. Mm-hmm. And one time, these Chinese or Koreans or Japanese, they studied in the United States and they remained in the United States.
Right.
But now the world is changing, so China is opening more and more mm-hmm. the doors, and so these students, they study here or in Vienna or in London or in Milano, and they go back. So the level is quite high. So I will do a concert there, and because it's the Mahler year, I will do the Mahler, the Lieder eines fahrenden Gesellen,
mm-hmm. Songs of a Wayfarer.
Yeah. And then I will bring the Shanghai Orchestra to Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do the concert there with the same program. And then I go back to Italy. I hope to be able to go 2 days to the south of Italy to see my little stone houses. And then I start the rehearsals in Roma of Macbeth, again with Peter Stein. And then after the last Macbeth in Roma, I go to Napoli, my city, and I do the Verdi Requiem there. And then I will go back to Napoli in April because I bring the Chicago Symphony to a wonderful tour that will go to Moscow, to St. Petersburg, and then Roma, Napoli, and Ravenna, this the city where I live, and I hope to make a big party for the orchestra there.
And you're going to one other city in Italy?
Brescia.
Brescia, which is near a city you used to work in.
No, Brescia, yes, it's near Milano, but it's Milano, then you have Bergamo, and then Brescia, so. And in the direction of Venezia. And Brescia has a very important theater that is called Teatro Grande, di Brescia. And Brescia is known in Italy as la Leonessa d'Italia. The lioness.
Venice is the lion, and
there's la Brescia, la Leonessa.
The Leonessa
d'Italia. And so Brescia and Ravenna, and then I come back here.
And in February, you're taking the orchestra to California. Very exotic.
Yeah, but no. That's when I was music director in Philadelphia, I liked to make tours in the United States, because I've learned so many things about the United States when I was music director there, and I've been in many places like Ames, Iowa, Toledo, Kansas City,
Raleigh.
In Raleigh it was with the Philharmonia.
Okay. But it was traveling around the United States.
So it's beautiful. I like also because people are wonderful and grateful that a great orchestra goes to visit them.
But even going to the Los Angeles area or to San Francisco, we forget people don't have an opportunity to hear the Chicago Symphony. If you live in Vienna or Paris or Berlin, you might hear the Chicago Symphony Orchestra all the time. But if you live in California or Florida, you don't hear the Chicago Symphony. And yet these are people who love music, have great orchestras themselves in many cases.
I think it's not only good to travel for the musicians to play in different cities, but it's also a social and moral obligation.
Well, Maestro, it's so great to have you back in Chicago and to see the wonderful rapport that you retain with the orchestra that is already enhanced and with some new faces as well, because we have now the first ever associate concertmaster of the orchestra, Stephanie Jiang, and we have a principal clarinet, Stephen Williamson. So I know you must feel good to know that these can be checked off, but also they can integrate into the orchestra.
I'm very happy about these two players, and I think that they will be a very good contribution to the orchestra. The clarinet, we have waited a long time to find the right one, because here was a great first clarinet, Mr. Combs. And so we decided, we made many auditions, and we had many good players that came at the audition, but we wanted the best possible. And I think that this young player that was principal at the Met.
Right.
Is a fantastic player, and it's been already accepted very well by his colleagues. Everybody is enthusiastic about him, and he has already given good proof of his talent and his artistry. And also the associated concertmeister, she's doing very well. Actually, she had also the possibility to prove her talent and her nerves, because in a difficult program like this one with the Faust Symphony, with big solos, etc., she had to substitute Robert Chen at the last moment. And so for her was a big challenge, and she was very successful. So I hope that these two choices that you have made will be, for the future, always a great contribution to the orchestra.
Maestro, it's a great pleasure again, and we look forward to talking with you in Stockholm and then back in Chicago, California, Russia, and especially Italy, and especially Napoli.
Bene, grazie. Thank you.
Recorded just Sunday afternoon, October 2nd, 2011, in the music director's suite in the basement of Orchestra Hall in downtown Chicago. Thank you to Maestro Muti for his generosity of time and spirit. Thanks to Eric Arunas, who recorded the interview for us. Thanks, as ever, to Matt DeStefano, who makes this program sound great. To our funders, Alphawood Foundation, Richard and Susan Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. Go to the website, WFMT.com, then click the Chime In button. You can also send us an email, rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com, and you can listen to this or any of our broadcasts on the free Critical Thinking podcast, WFMT.com/Critical Thinking. Music that we heard tonight comes from a recording that's become a favorite here in Chicago and here at WFMT. I wonder why. Ricardo Muti and the Filarmonica della Scala, Nino Rota, music for film, specifically in this case the opening title from Il Gattopardo, The Leopard of Luchino Visconti, and then the trumpet theme of Polidor from La Dolce Vita of Federico Fellini, Giuseppe Bodanza, solo trumpet. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.